Get out of here. Way back, hooks up. There's the cycle. You can't put it on the board. Yes!
A single, double, triple, and home run in one game.
And he has hit for the cycle.
All right, let's dive right in. We're very excited to be welcoming to the cycle James Baldwin and Mike Soraka.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. I'm here with Jim Flanagan, and we've been on a little bit of a hiatus on our podcast, so we're excited to be jumping back in with you guys to
homecoming weekend for all of us, huh?
Yeah.
Throwback podcast.
Homecoming weekend, and I saw you guys in the booth last night, and you'd thrown out the first pitch, and both of you guys talked about how you were nervous. Throwing out the first pitch.
I was very nervous. I'm telling you, being in front of a crowd like that, you know, absolutely pitched in front of a crowd like that, but it was just like getting married. Yeah. I was nervous doing that. So, but anyway.
Your starters, throwing out the first pitch is what you're known for.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, we were all pretty nervous except for Howie, but Howie showed up late after the rain delays, but me, Folk, and JB, like, we had too much time to think.
That's
about
hilarious to me. Know, right? You guys would be nervous about throwing a baseball.
Absolutely. I mean, it happens.
Who had the best pitch?
Howie
did.
Howie? Yeah. Okay.
He's the only one that threw a strike.
Yeah.
Mine bounced.
And I lobbed mine in. So
that's awesome.
Pretty good.
That is awesome. So you guys were both major contributors to one of the White Sox fans' favorite teams, the 2000 team that won the division. Talk about that year, and James, maybe we'll start with you. I know you made the All-Star team that year, and you had a fantastic year. What was that team like?
It was a family. You know, we don't even call it a team because it was a family-oriented, and we went out. When you saw one guy, you saw everybody, you know, when we went out to eat. So I think that really brought us together as far as, you know, making us feel comfortable going out there on the mound because we knew we had each other back at all times.
You weren't nervous then?
No, I was not.
You did something that I remember, and I don't think I've seen many pitchers do this, but when there was a pitcher, when you would come out of the game,
uh-huh,
and they would change pitchers, bring someone to the bullpen, you would wait on the mound and greet that pitcher.
That's something that I always did, you know, because I knew that typically, when I came out the game, I'm leaving a mess on the base. So
yeah.
I was just, you know, giving them a little bit of confidence and whatnot. But no, all in all, that's just about respect. You know?
Don't see that a lot. Mike never did it. He didn't care about the guy coming in.
No, not at all. No, that is a kind of a lost thing. You know, sometimes, you know, when you're coming out of the game, usually it's not a good situation, and you've kind of thinking through things in terms of the mess you did leave for that guy. And
what's said at that time when the manager comes out, and what's often said if
he's taking the ball from you? Pretty much nothing.
And once in a while I will say, you know, go back in the dugout, but other than that, oh yeah, I did.
No kidding.
Yeah. No kidding.
Did it ever work?
Would they?
Sometime.
Yeah.
But yeah. Typically they,
so I have a funny story with Jerry Manuel. So during that, I think that there was during the 2000 season, I had been taken out late in some games against some lefties, and I went to Jerry and I said, "Jerry, leave me in. I've trained all winter for this. I can handle the extra pitches." And sure enough, the next game, Jason Giambi comes up. It's like seventh inning, two guys on base. I end up giving up a three-run homer. Take a peek in the dugout, and Jerry's just kind of smiling at me. Yeah. And and he comes out, and I'm like, I guess we're not doing that again.
You gave it a go. Mike, 2000 was a big year for you, too. Career high, 15 wins. I mean, with two of you coming, like having career years like that, was that part of the success? Were you guys pushing each other? Was it great watching your teammates?
Well, absolutely. Like that was the best thing about that team is we were all pulling for each other all the time, you know, between me, Parquet, Kip Wells, JB, you know, on down through the bullpen, was that we were so tight, and you don't really see that in the professional major league teams. Everybody's just kind of, you know, here and there, but, you know, a lot of us had come up together. We were Sox minor leaguers, and we were buddies, you know, and so, you know, part of what we had was just a great bond,
mm-hmm.
and that's what made it such a special team for us.
Is there a funny story that you guys, or things that you guys have been rehashing this weekend that you could share with us, like maybe an off the field incident? Who were some of like the more crazy guys?
Well, like off the field, you know, a lot of us hung out together, but you know, in like last night afterwards, we were talking about how Folk and Howery were best buddies, but they're always bickering to each other.
and then
the wives are like, "How can you guys talk to each other like that?" And then the next day, you know, you're getting a ride with them to the ballpark. the wives are like, "No, we would have a problem with that." You know, we're just like calling each other out, you know, and making fun of how Folk and Howery kind of bickered with each other.
Sure. Was it kind of like the starters group together and the relievers group together?
Well, actually, everybody was together.
That's awesome.
You know, like, honestly, when we didn't pitch and we were watching the game, you would see the four starters sitting up here. Obviously, we couldn't be around the relievers because they was in the bullpen.
Right.
But all in all, we was a group of just like a brotherly love family, honestly.
Yeah.
And it was a dominant team that kind of came out of nowhere. The Indians had had this 5-year run, and
yeah,
you had
stacked.
Some young guys.
Yes. Stacked.
You had some young major contributors to the 05 team in Konerko and Mark Burley
sure.
that I'm sure mm-hmm. that playoff run benefited them going into 05. What was it like going into the playoffs against the Mariners? And you guys were, you know, you definitely had every bit of a chance to beat them, and all three games were close.
Yeah, you know, looking back, obviously, you know, my injury kind of threw to that little last week of the season and our prep time leading up to that. And since we were, you know, not the Yankees, we ended up with that 4 o'clock time slot, which kind of threw off like our rhythm.
I was at that game.
And, you know, in terms of between my injury, the time slot, and then the 4 o'clock time slot out in Seattle, where the sun was, you know, beaming off the hitter's eye, and it was a 2-1 game, and we lose on a drag bunt.
Yep. Right.
And then, you know, and we're just sitting there going, you know, we just won 95 games.
Yeah. Yeah.
What happened?
It was one run you guys got. Baines like tagged up from second to third scoring positions. Like,
yeah. So you know, nobody could see the ball.
Sure.
And you know, he threw a great game. We had the best offense, and we're scoring one run.
Yeah.
And so you know, we had our sights set so much further, and to have it just kind of get thrown out of whack so quickly was just devastating to us. You know, and you know, that's, you know, part of the reason why you know, when I got traded, I was just like, man, I had just built this thing with these guys, and I wanted to continue it.
Right.
And that's what, you know, I mean, that's what was...
That was heartbreaking, yeah, you know, to absolutely see Mike leave and then all of a sudden see Folky leave and Harry leave, and mm-hmm. we were like, what's going on? Yeah. What about next year, you know?
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, I mean, we call each other and talk to each other prior to that. But like I said, it's good to come back here to the ballpark and absolutely see them in person because...
Yeah.
They all look the same, you know. They still look like they can pitch, and, you know. So,
right.
How great is that, though, to get everybody back together for an event like this?
Yeah, and that's what it's all about. Is the people, you know, front office people, the people that are still, you know, still working the gates, and you know, they were always so good to us, such a family atmosphere that has been created here, and you know, walk around every corner. Hey.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think it's been said before, and at this point, it's part of his legacy. Jerry Reinsdorf, it all starts with him, and he is mm-hmm. very loyal to people, and he creates this family environment.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
Are there guys that you're still in touch with that couldn't make it this weekend?
I'm in touch with a lot of guys. You know, Frank Thomas, I talk to him a lot. You know, Carlos Lee every once, or you know, a couple of times, but you know, like I said, Zero and
yeah.
You know,
so I keep in touch with Parquet quite a bit.
Yeah.
We've just launched a product, baseball product,
really
together.
What is it?
It's called Velo Pro, and it's a kind of a harness that players attach to. And since we've both been involved in the youth game for a while now, we saw some of the things that young players have trouble doing and why it's such a hard sport to learn. So it's just basically a product that helps
sure.
improve
awesome.
How they move. Yeah.
Both of you guys are working now to develop younger players.
Yes.
James, talk about what you're up to now.
Well, I'm with the Cincinnati Reds now, doing the rehab program over that, and also the extended. You know, it's all about going out there and making sure these guys, like Mike said, you know, they're there for a reason. What I do is make sure that they're doing the proper, you know, mechanics, so to speak, and all that good stuff. And then, you know, look at films and making sure that all that's going in the right direction from the major leagues on down to the rookie level. Mm-hmm. And like I said, you know, I'm really enjoying what I do because, like I said, you know, me and Mike is, you know, we've been there, done that, you know, so right. to speak. And so what we're trying to do is let these guys know that, you know, that you can make it. You can make it because I'm sure Mike would tell you it was a dream come true when we first got to this ballpark, and you're talking about nervous when I first got here. Then after that, you know, everything was history.
Were you guys part of the era where, like, maybe when you were younger pitching in college and maybe pitch count wasn't as big of a thing, or was that a thing then?
I played at LSU for Skip Bertman, and Skip was notorious for extending his primary guys. For instance, my senior year at LSU, I threw 10 complete games in college, and pitched the game to get us to the College World Series final. I think I threw 152 pitches.
Unreal.
So I show up in White Sox camp, and they're like, "You're not touching a ball."
Really?
Yeah.
I pitched 10 innings. I said, "Yeah." They shut me down for 6 weeks. I think I pitched 10 innings my first summer of professional baseball.
Did you guys win the college title?
Yeah, twice, 91 and 93.
Oh, that's awesome.
Big time.
Yeah, should have done a little more research. You should have led with that. What about working with younger guys, like, and being still involved with the game? What's the biggest change that you've seen from your career to now?
Well, I look at it now, everybody's protective of the younger kids, which they should be in their own rights. It was just like you were saying with Mike, you know, when we played, we didn't give a crap about pitch counts or one of that other that nature, but now you can't let a starter go no more than, you know, 60-70 pitches now, you know, or 5 innings, you know, rather than going 8-9 innings, you know,
except at the youth level where they let you throw 5 innings on Saturday and 4 innings on Sunday.
Yeah, so but other than that, I mean, that's about it.
Yeah, so the youth game has changed tremendously.
Yes.
With all the tournament ball and these guys are playing, you know, unbelievable amounts of games, unbelievable amounts of pitches on young bodies. And that's where, you know, I've really kind of found my niche in helping guide pitchers and their families specifically on how to navigate those waters and come through the other side healthy.
How do you feel after pitching a Major League Baseball game and throwing 80, 90 pitches? What is it like the next day?
Like, got hit by a truck.
Yeah.
No,
basically.
Yeah,
kidding. Oh, yeah. For the first 2 days.
Everywhere, your whole body?
Everything. Yeah. Everything. You're hurting. And the good thing about that is you have great trainers that do some tremendous stuff to help us stay on the field, you know, behind the scene that people don't really see as far as the massage and, you know, just treatment in general. We get here, say a game is at 7 o'clock. We'll get here around 12 o'clock just to get treatment and make sure that that's first, and then we'll start our workout or whatever. But it's tough.
What's the hardest thing is the demand over the 7.5 months as a starter, having to do it 35 to 37 times every 5 days to be able to sustain that year after year is really the hardest challenge. Once you figure out you can get the guys out,
is it possible to feel good at the better at the 25th start than at the 15th start? Are there times when you actually
feel? There's probably lulls, you know,
up and down.
Up and down.
Yeah, it's just up and down. You know, some days you go out there, you know, like your 10th start, you feel so bad, you just tired. But then when you get to your 20th start, you're like, okay, I'm ready to go. You know, I feel good today. It's up and down days.
What about the idea of like a short day of rest or a long day? How much does that affect everything? Because everything is routine based, I would imagine.
Yeah, it all depends. It all depends. You know, some days you do need that fifth day rest, and some days you feel good to where you can go out there and pitch in 3 days rest. Mm-hmm. I've done it several times.
Sure. I think you guys also, one of the unique things about this pairing is you both have very interesting celebrity pitching stories. James, you were the first person to throw a baseball to Michael Jordan in spring training.
Absolutely.
What was that like? What was that feeling?
Nervous.
Yeah?
Yes.
Man, you are always nervous, James.
Bundle of nerves. You didn't look it at all.
I mean, I'm telling you, every game that I pitched in the major leagues, before I hit that mound, I was nervous.
Yeah.
Until after I threw the first pitch, I was ready to go. But dealing with Michael Jordan, you know, after the fact that he retired and he came down, I remember we was in Sarasota. And they said that, well, you have to pitch today. And I'm like, who am I facing? You know, I didn't want to hurt him, you know, right, because you couldn't pitch the side because we didn't know how long, you know, whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, man, I'm telling you, after the first pitch, he took this good hack on me, and I'm like, okay, you can hit a fastball, and then I threw him a curveball, and it was over.
You struck him out.
No, he hit a line drive.
That was your pitch, right? The
yeah,
curveball.
Yeah.
That was your best pitch, you
think? I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was a pretty good
one. He had a lot of good pitches.
Well, so you both did. I mean, yeah, you guys had great careers. What about you? You had given up, and I know this is what Jim was alluding to with the celebrity stuff. You gave up a hit to Garth Brooks.
Well, the guy can flat out rake, obviously. Yeah. Yeah, we knew that going in. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to be a tough out. So, you know, they said give him your best stuff.
You laid one in. Is that what you're saying?
So we just threw him a fastball down the middle, and
yeah, why not? That's a cool story.
Did your buddies give you crap about that?
Oh yeah, big time. For sure, especially right after it happened. I think, you know, I had, you know, a ton of messages right after it happened. And then, it got to the point where Jim Rome was like, the White Sox should not even carry this guy. They should release him.
Jim Rome.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like him at all.
What does he want you to do? Throw it at Garth Brooks' head?
Yeah. But the funny thing it was, so it's a little dribbler up the middle, but they had played at our facility, you know, a few days prior, and he had hit a line drive to the gap that our left fielder like laid out against the wall made the play.
Mm-hmm. He could really hit now.
Oh, I mean, sure.
He was actually
he could, he, even though he only got one or two hits.
Yeah.
He got one, not two.
He got one, and it was against you.
Yeah, but so the funny thing, but he, you know, he did not embarrass himself. He
no, he embarrassed. No, I'm kidding. No, he didn't. No,
but
he did.
The amazing thing is the liner to the gap they catch, and then the dribbler up the middle.
Yeah.
That's the one they let through, really?
Yeah.
I got to take this one.
Yeah.
Who threw the first pitch to him that he hit into the gap? Do you remember?
No, I don't remember.
Okay.
We were kind of instructed not to throw him the breaking balls and just. You know, give
makes
him good hard fastballs, and you know, whatever happens.
That's awesome, though. That's fun.
That's cool. It's cool.
It was good.
What's the best thing about being back in Chicago?
The best thing about being back in Chicago is greeting the fans or whatever. Like Mike said, everybody's still here. You know, from the grounds crew, from the front office, from obviously, you know. Hopefully we get to see Jerry today and whatnot, but you know, it's just good to come back and then obviously
the people, the environment, guys, the fans. You know, I mean, that's the stuff that it just, you know, brings a smile to your face.
Have you gotten to see some of the changes in the stadium?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
oh,
a little bit. Yeah,
it's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Yeah, that's for.
I'm glad they kept it big while I was pitching.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
I don't like the short fences.
No. I believe it.
You said in the booth last night that one of your goofiest teammates was Robin Ventura. Give us one story.
He was the quiet, goofy guy who would, you know, he was in kind of the ringleader of, you know, when you got on that bus with those veterans, and at that time when we were coming, JB and I were coming up, you know, we were the only 20-year-old guys on the team. Yeah. Everybody else was 30-plus. Mm-hmm. Except for Jason Bure, and so they get on there, and I don't know, they do all kinds of stuff to us.
Everything.
I mean, just stuff, nothing bad. The outfits,
they haze you a bit.
I don't call it hazing.
It wasn't hazing, no. It was just a rookie thing that they did.
Sure.
I remember I was Superman. I think what was
you? No, I was. skin tight leopard pants and a band leader's top.
Yes, yes. I still have that picture, by the way.
It's awesome. Oh, yeah. Yes, yes. Send it to us.
I know, right? We need to see that picture.
I'm telling you. And they made us walk from the ballpark to the hotel down in Boston on the sidewalk with all this costume.
And those, that's amazing.
It was funny. And the bus was right beside us the whole time. It was funny.
Think you would enjoy the social media aspect of professional sports as it is now? Or are you glad you played when you did?
I'm glad I played when I did.
We played in the perfect era for, you know, it was still...
Still big contracts.
well, still, you know, in terms of, you know, we had some freedoms to go out.
Sure.
We didn't have to listen to, you know, necessarily people saying negative things publicly that we can
constantly
read. You know, if you pitch bad and the newspaper guys write something bad about it, big deal. You know, that's part of the deal. But you know, to have some guy hiding on the internet talking trash about you, that's
like Jim Rome.
that's what's wrong with today's game, professional sports now. These guys stay on their phone more than they do studying the game and what they need to do, you know, and that's the difference. You know, that's the different era, you know, we go through, and it's just like when we came up, you know, we pitched. Now you see today's era, everybody's throwing 100.
Sure.
You know, and...
But for the social media stuff, we didn't have, I mean, we may have had the early cell phones, but we couldn't do anything with them.
Right.
So we had to interact with our team and bond.
Right.
You know,
that's every face-to-face profession,
yes,
every human being.
Yes.
We're all just
on
our phones.
Yes.
Yeah. So
way
no,
too much.
No distractions other than, hey, let's go to the video room, take a look at how these guys are hitting. And
for those of you on your phones, make sure you download the cycle and subscribe on iTunes.
Leave us a review. Do all those things.
All right. No, we're going to get you guys out of here. But really, thanks for joining us. Thanks for coming back to Chicago, and great to have you here at Guaranteed Rate Field. And honestly, that 2000 team, I mean, that's one of the most fun teams, and what a year that was.
Absolutely. Great to be back.
Yes.
Great to see everybody, and you know, hope the fans come out and say hi to us.
Yeah. All right, thanks for sharing those memories, guys.
Thank you, Mike Soraka. Thank you, James Baldwin. All right, welcome back to The Cycle. I am your host, Pat McGann. I'm here with Jim Flanagan. And joining us, two major contributing relief pitchers to the Chicago White Sox organization, Bob Howry and Keith Folk.
Welcome, gentlemen.
Welcome. Come on.
Thank you, guys.
Let's go. We're here. We're doing
thank
this.
You, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thanks
Let's
for being
dive
here.
Right in. It's homecoming weekend here at the park, and we did have a conversation with Mike Soraka and James Baldwin. We kind of thought it would be nice to pair the starters and then bring in the relievers. So welcome back to Chicago. What are you guys excited about being back here?
Yeah, well, it's you know, it's really the first time I've been back since, well, I guess the All-Star game in 03. And, you know, when teams do something like this where they bring us back in, you know, it's great to see your old teammates, to see the old stomping ground. And, you know, last night walking around, seeing all the old, you know, the employees that, you know, run this place are still here. You know, and they still look great, so it's, you know, it's a true homecoming.
Yeah, these guys, when we did talk to Mike and James, they said that you two were like a couple.
we spent a lot of time together.
Yeah?
It's like I was telling those guys last night, it's like in pro ball, Keith's the first guy I ever met. Mm-hmm. We were both drafted by the Giants.
Right.
So when I walked into my hotel room in Everett, Washington in 94, Keith was in there. He was my roommate, you know, so... We played together in 94, 95, 96. We get traded together in 97. You know,
and that trade has been dissected and analyzed and is a well-known trade on the South Side. So that would be that's funny. That is luck
we
have
it. White flag trade. Just, yeah. No one can forget it.
Yeah,
we
you
made
can call
commercials
it that.
About.
I'm employed here, so I don't know. If
we can't call
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you did commercials about it.
Yeah, we did. We didn't name it. That's what they
sure
everybody
right.
called it.
What was that like coming over in that trade and then having it be a conversation for a couple of years before, you know, the year 2000, I think, when it became like a validated trade? But those first couple of years, was it?
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, as players, it didn't really involve us a whole lot. You know, we were just over here doing a job. And, you know, I know for me, it was, you know, it was kind of a birth for me, you know, getting out of the Giants. And, you know, I was struggling over there and coming over here. It was, you know, they just wanted you to go out and play baseball. Didn't hold, have a whole lot of the, you know, stuff hanging over my head. Sometimes new coaches helped out. So, I mean, it was great for me.
How much easier was that, having a friend with you when you guys came over here?
Well, we weren't. The thing is, we weren't together when we came over. Mm. I mean, when we came over, there was, what, six of us in the trade.
Mm-hmm.
Keith was the only one who had even spent any time in the big leagues.
Right.
I think 97 was what? I think it was his first, yeah, the first year you were back
year.
Going back and forth.
Yeah.
So, you know, he comes over, he goes to the big leagues. I went to double A, you know, and then, what, 98, he still, you know, he starts in the big leagues. I go to triple A.
Sure.
So it's not like we were, you know, we spent spring. I think we lived together in spring training, you know, the first year. But other than that, you know, we weren't playing together in the season.
Yeah, we were just like, we were taking a break.
Yeah.
You know, right. You can see your people, see right, my people, and we'll meet up down the road maybe. We'll
it is happens. A true love story. It's like, well, that we weren't together then.
Right.
We were just writing letters to each other. And, all right, so let's talk about 2000 because that, to me, was a great year. You know, it was kind of – you know, I'm a lifelong White Sox fan. So 83, 93, and then there's a little bit of break there with the they had the strike and then the Indians' dominance. But 2000 was back. You know, the White Sox were back. The brawl in April. I happened to be at that game. And we're playing the Tigers this weekend, right?
Yes.
Let's take us there because you got cold-cocked, which was kind of BS.
Yeah.
You got heated, Bob, real big later in the game, but – to walk everybody through, and I just wanted to put this out there to anyone listening. You can stop now and go watch it, or watch it right after on YouTube, White Sox Tigers Brawl. It is a doozy. It's one of the best brawls in baseball history.
It was definitely a big brawl, and I don't know. I'm probably not the best one to talk about because I don't remember a lot of it. But, I mean, I think Parquet was pitching, and I don't even remember how it got started.
Well, the problem was is we were lighting Jeff Weaver up that day.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hits, like, you know, I think he hit, like, three of our guys. So Parquet goes out, hits Palmer. And I guess from what I heard, Palmer thought it was a little high. I mean, he hit him upper back. And, you know, he should have charged Weaver because he's the reason he got hit. But instead he charges Parquet.
And
you know,
threw
and
his
then,
helmet.
And then we got a 15-minute brawl. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. You got hats and gloves and crap all over the field. You know, it starts at the pitcher's mound. And then it goes to out to shortstop, and you got a pile out there. You got Ordonez out there with spikes on, trying to kick guys in the head. Jeez. And then that's when Seamus and Keith take off. I don't know who was in right field, but
well,
it starts going to right field.
They were all
field.
Chasing Maglio down. It's like, you know, you look up from what you're doing, you're like, holy cow, it's a stampede out after Maglio. So we take off after that, and yeah, then yeah, we're in right field, and you know, I get sucker punch and get
I mean,
up.
Juan Samuel, who's a coach. Was swinging at Seamus,
yeah.
I believe. And then I just watched it this morning just to refresh my memory. So you go out, and you're out in the pretty much the outfield now,
yeah.
Right field, and it was a Garcia or something? Just
So when I take off to right field with me and, you know, and Seamus, and it's funny because I didn't even know what happened. You know, I was so locked in on trying to get to Maglio, and I think, yeah, like I said, Juan Samuel was out there throwing punches. I was so focused on getting out there that Kareem Garcia and Bobby Higginson were hitting me from behind, and I didn't even realize it. You know, and I just remember sitting in there, and I had Samuel in my sights, and I went to square him up and then end up getting knocked down. And that's when one of the relief pitchers is sitting there
Patterson
kicking me.
Kicking him while he's on the
kicking
ground.
Kicking me while I was on the ground. And I remember getting up, and I just thought I had grass on my face. I'm like, what's on my face? And that's when Mark Johnson's like, well, dude, you're cut. You know,
the Tigers were brutal then, right? So they had nothing to lose.
Yeah.
They were not.
Yeah, they were.
Oh, man, that was. So let me just hear, like, what happens after that? Do you hear from these guys? Do you just hate them forever? Or did any of them try? Do guys apologize? Because sometimes, inevitably, you're going to probably be on a team with some of these guys.
Yeah, well, they'd never apologize. I have a list at home, and there's a couple names on there. But it's funny, after that, you know, I mean, I guess we had cell phones back then, or I don't know if we had cell phones.
About the time they were just coming out.
So, but no, I mean, they were definitely not apologetic. And every time I faced Higginson and Kareem Garcia after that, you know, I never wanted to go get them because it was usually in a, you know, we're trying to win a ball game.
And then when you're on the mound more than ever, right?
Yeah, so, you know, I would get, my thing was I'd get ahead of them, and then the next two were, they weren't inside. I mean, I was throwing it in the spot, and – you can stay there if you want.
Yeah.
Or yeah.
What did that?
And then you put them away, and it's like, go, you know.
Sit down. What did that brawl do for that team? Did it kind of help bring everyone together after the fact?
It seemed to work that way, because I don't think we were doing anything great up until that. You know, obviously it's still early in the season. We hadn't, it's not like we started out, I don't think, on fire. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like after that, everything just started clicking and we just started rolling.
Dude, you were hot at Todd Jones.
No. I wasn't hot at Todd Jones. Todd Jones was hot at me.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even part of it, you know?
Right.
If they would have looked at the situation of the game, it's the ninth inning where the score's out of hand. I think I'm throwing because everyone else had already got kicked out, and so we'd already been in, you know, relievers coming in to fill in the rest of the game. So we got two outs. I got two strikes on Shane Halter. I throw a fastball. It tails up and – not even really up and in. I hit him right in the elbow. And I know that hurts. You know, you see it on the – if you watch the video this morning, he throws his bat down. He looks out at the mound. I'm just standing there. He puts his head down. He goes to first base.
Well, you may have said something to him.
No, I didn't say a word. Not to him, I didn't say a word.
Oh, okay.
But then you get Todd Jones comes out of the dugouts before they had rails, and he just stands on the front, and he's pointing at me, and he's yelling at me and telling me what a great person I am.
Yeah.
So as I'm telling him that he's my number one fan and all that back, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you get Doug Brocale comes flying out. He doesn't even have shoes on. He's in his socks. Comes flying out of the from up in the locker room.
Right.
And he's the one who charges onto the field. So I'm getting charged by another relief pitcher. And that's when the whole thing starts again.
But, and you two, I mean, you're a beast, and he's a big dude. That would not have been good if you guys did probably engage.
Yeah. Well, baseball fights are they're never good.
Right.
I mean, because it's not like you're just going to go, all right, me and you, you know, like hockey, where we're going to square up and let's settle this. I mean, you know, you got people from all over the place and different kinds of people.
Like,
and,
yeah.
Are you out there mainly to break it up or to hold guys back, or sometimes you just get into it?
Probably not that day.
No.
some days, yes. Some days, no. But what? You know what's cool is I have I'm in a one of the hotels. I don't know who I was playing for at the time. I walk into a hotel on the road, and the guy who, like the hotel manager, whoever, like handles all our stuff when we get there, he's like, hey, come check this out. And his screensaver is me and Brocale, like squared off, and all the guys around. And you can see us like yelling, it's my back, and Brocale's yelling. And so I was like, I need that picture. So I get it, and I had it. I show my wife. So one year for a gift, she talks to somebody, gets it sent off, and he signs it and sends it back. And it's just like the things we do for a photo op.
Really?
And so at my retirement party, she had like they're probably, I don't know, 3 foot wide by 5 foot tall, like posters made that she had put up. And one of the ones that she had made was that picture with that on it. Turned into a big old thing, and it's in my gym now.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So it's pretty cool.
That is so funny. The bullpen is a different environment, right, from the dugout, obviously. And you guys spent your careers hanging out in bullpens. What goes on in a bullpen? Like, what are you guys doing out there? Like, the first few innings?
A lot of seed flicking. Well, first few innings, we're watching – me and him are watching the game from inside.
Yeah, usually in there with the feet up watching on the big screen and – you know, figuring out what was for dinner that day.
When do you start to think?
When you're not going to throw until eighth, ninth inning, seventh, eighth, ninth, or whatever, it's like to go sit out there in the little cage for nine innings. It's like,
are there games that you want to get in that you're like, I haven't pitched for a couple of days, like I want to pitch tonight? When do you start thinking like, oh, they're probably going to use me tonight, or does this start to be like a thing that you?
Yeah, I mean, if you've had a few days off, most of the time you're talking about it before, you know, with your staff before the game even starts. So it's like, you know, I've had 3 days off, I need to get in tonight, and they're like, all right, we'll get you an inning, you know. But a lot of it just depends on the individual. Some guys like to throw more than others, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, those things kind of vary across the board.
You guys both did a lot of pitching in the eighth and ninth innings, back and forth at times too. Was there a different mentality in the eighth versus the ninth for you guys?
There wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I was one of those guys where when I got on the mound, I wanted to be as calm as possible so I could think and, you know, process all the information, you know, and I'd love to pitch, so I didn't care if it was, you know, in the fifth inning or the ninth inning. You know, the only thing that's different is, you know, the paycheck.
Sure.
Did you develop that changeup? Did you have that when you came from San Francisco, or is it something that you perfected here?
it was something that I was working on, because in 94 when I got drafted, I go to the Giants, you know, and I used to throw, you know, I didn't throw very hard, but I had like a little forkball split finger, and that was after the Giants were getting out of the Roger Craig era, and they're like, you can't throw that anymore. And I'm like, what? So here I'm in pro ball with all these beasts like this.
Why
throwing hard. Because they, for the elbow.
Oh, okay.
That's when, like,
just
all,
to keep you.
A lot of elbow injuries. And
yeah.
So that's when I had Keith Comstock, my pitching coach that year. You know, he showed me how he threw his screwball, and so I just started messing with it. And so I pitched, you know, with it throughout the minors, but it was never as good as it was. I got my shoulder fixed in 98, and I came back for 99 where I could actually throw again, and mm-hmm. that's when the changeup just kind of exploded on the scene.
And you had you went on quite a run there as one of the premier closers in baseball. 2000, you guys made it to the playoffs, and you know didn't have success against the Mariners, which was sucked.
It definitely ended quickly.
I'm sure it sucked more for you guys, but in 2004 with the Red Sox, do you think that experience translated, having pitched in the postseason?
Absolutely. You know, when we went in to play Seattle in 2000, I mean, we got freight train. They were coming in hot. We were coming in pretty flat. And, yeah, so I go in there, and I remember giving up a couple home runs and sitting in arbitration a couple years later. The White Sox reminded me of it again.
Nice.
But, yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah.
What? So you're in arbitration. You're looking for money, and they're like, well, what about
– arbitration, that's kind of
they show Olerud?
Yeah.
Really?
They basically – it's funny. Oh, you know, for arbitration, man. You're sitting in there – and they're telling you how much you suck, and you're trying to show to them, hey, I'm not that bad, I don't think.
And they're like, no, you are that bad, but we want to keep you. That's
yeah, exactly.
A weird combination.
And then your buddies are outside. He does suck.
You got
keep the money from me.
You got fans in the upper deck hollering at you, and you're like, shh, not today.
That's hilarious.
No, but that experience definitely it taught me how fast it can happen. You know, it's like you're in the playoffs, you're basically playing for your lives, and there may not be a tomorrow. And so you have to be, you know, you have to be on your game every day. There's no room for error, you know, being a bullpen guy in the playoffs. It's,
yeah.
I mean, it's go now or, you know, it's, you know, got 3 months off till spring starts.
You had an incredible, like, just from 02 to 03 to 04, just going from the White Sox organization over to Oakland, leading the league in saves, first All-Star team, into that 04 final out of the World Series. I mean, that had to be such a whirlwind. Also moving across the country. I mean, what was all that like?
Yeah, well, that was a tough spell for me because, I mean, I love playing here.
Sure.
You know, I wanted to sign, you know, a multi-year deal and stay here and all that stuff. But, you know, obviously the front office had different plans. And, you know, so they moved me on after the 02 season. You know, I get to Oakland and, you know, it's another easy place to pitch, you know, and, mm-hmm. and things worked out great there. And, you know, it was kind of cool coming back for the All-Star game in 03, and you know, then obviously going on to Boston for 04. Yeah, that's, you know, helped make a career.
You just missed him in Boston then, because you were out there as well, right?
Yeah, because that's where I got traded from here in 02. I went out there and I ended up getting the end of 02 before the season was over. Ended up hurting my elbow. Tried to rehab it. Come back for 03. Didn't go well, and then ended up having surgery that year. And so because of that, they let me go after the 03 season.
And you told them, hey, you should think about my buddy because I really miss him.
Yeah. If you don't have – you need one of us. And so they shipped me out and brought in the better one, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Bob, you have one of those cool distinctions that you got to play on both the north side and south side of Chicago. What's that like?
It was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I loved playing on both sides. I mean, obviously this.
Which one do you love more?
Yeah. You know how many times I've had to answer that question? And then you look at what they're wearing. Are they wearing black and white, or are they wearing blue and red?
You know where we are. You know the answer to this question.
You know, but being here, this is my first big league team. This is the team that gave me a chance. I said, and actually this is the team I spent the most time with, you know, four years over five seasons.
Yeah, right.
So this was my longest stay.
You look like you could still play, man. What are
looks,
you up to these days?
Looks are deceiving.
Well, I wouldn't say it to Keith.
I'll be the first to let you know that I'm a little over my playing weight.
I'm kidding, man.
By about 70 pounds.
I wouldn't be talking
enjoy
trash if you didn't
retirement.
Have a teal wedding ring.
Yeah. What's funny is they keep showing these pictures. Like last night, they're showing these pictures of us when we were playing on the board. I'm like, looked a little different. I don't feel this old, but I don't look like that kid anymore.
No, what are you guys up to now?
Playing a little golf. Hanging out with the kids, you know, and then doing a little coaching at the high school.
Oh, great.
My son is well, he'll be going in as a freshman next year. But,
wow. How many kids you got?
Two. I got a daughter who will be a senior, and then my son. So I've been coaching his teams.
Do they have
kind of got into high school a little bit? So
at this point, they have a good appreciation for the kind of career you had and what you did.
No, not really, because I mean I've been done for 7 years.
Right, but so, I mean they can look back though, right? You can watch that brawl. I'll send them the link.
Can we get one of those little fuzzy things over the mouth? Because
it's so plain as day. That's one of my favorite parts about that brawl.
Do not do or say what I did. You know, but no. You know what's funny is I. You know, it is the other side of town, but I was back for the convention this year. And so we brought the kids because they were, you know, all they ever got experience was the kids' room. They didn't really want to be in the stands. They didn't want to watch games. They were so young. So we're like, all right, come back. And especially after the World Series, we're like, this would be kind of cool for them. So we brought them back. And my daughter, we get out of the car. And we tried to explain to her what it's going to be like because it's just craziness. You know, it doesn't matter
where do you guys live?
You're at in Arizona.
Okay.
So we get out of the car, and it's all set, and it's like there's 20 people standing there wanting you to sign stuff. And my daughter's over there with her camera, and she's just laughing and taking videos, and she's like, he's actually relevant. This is coming from the girl who, you know, they didn't understand. She didn't understand when I was actually playing on the other side of town. She's like, and she's like, well, why do they, ask my wife, why do they want his autograph? Well, she's trying to explain, you know, he's plays, you know, that makes him kind of popular, this and that. And she's like, no, they don't even have his jersey in the gift shop. Nothing like your kids to keep you humble.
Yeah, that's great, though.
And, Keith, I read something recently. You stepped completely away from baseball for a while. You weren't even watching games, and then recently you kind of jumped back in.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was no secret when I was playing, you know, baseball wasn't my favorite sport. You know, to me it was kind of boring.
Okay.
You know, I love to pitch.
All right. Well, we're glad you're back, Keith.
Yeah. All the downtime's what killed me, you know. Mm-hmm. And so when I got to, you know, sitting around the clubhouse, that was I hated it. Mm-hmm. But so when I, you know, when I left baseball, you know, I didn't want to watch it. I wanted to be completely away from it. And you know, I've got three boys, and so I think, you know, working with them and as they're getting older, I just kind of felt like this, like, man, I kind of enjoy teaching or, you know, working with younger players. And so I started pitching this idea to the Red Sox about, you know, working with the bullpen guys. Mm-hmm. And then finally, you know, last year they called me on it over the winter and was like, hey, we want to, you know, talk to you about a roving bullpen instructor. So, you know, this is my second year doing that. And
it's great.
You know, I'm loving it.
That's great.
And you're spending time all throughout the minors, majors as well? Are you going to all levels?
No,
just minors?
Yeah. They keep me away from 4A.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I go from our high A team in Salem, Virginia, double A in Portland, Maine, and triple A is Pawtucket, Rhode Island.
That's awesome.
Well, listen, it's great having you guys back in Chicago, and I hope you guys enjoy the rest of your weekend here. We're going to wrap things up because they have something going on here.
they have more
Luis Robert
to talk.
Luis Robert's coming in. They're gonna do a little press conference in here.
So I think we're the future out.
Are we going out tonight or
on your time?
All right, fellas, come on.
It's early.
You're on Twitter. I want you to plug it. What's your Twitter
just
handle?
Keith Folk.
Yeah, Keith Folk. And I love it. In his bio, it says "Proud American and Redneck."
Yeah, keep to the heritage.
That's fantastic. Are you not on Twitter?
Yeah, I am. Don't know how to use social media.
All right, we'll give you a tutorial after this. But honestly, thanks so much for being here. A lot of fun, and hopefully we can have another conversation next time you guys come through Chicago.
A holler at us.
All right, Bob Howry, Keith Folk, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
He gone! He did it!